Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Hilliard Macbeth, author of the second edition of the book When the Bubble Burst, Surviving the Canadian Real Estate Crash. He's also a portfolio manager and financial advisor in Edmonton. Welcome back to the show.
It's always great to be on the show.
Hilliard, in BC, the provincial government is changing the rules for short-term rentals, your Airbnbs and so on, trying to increase the number of units available for long-term rentals. Do you think cracking down on the short-termers will help, or will they just go underground?
You know, I think there's a lot of illegal Airbnbs. My understanding is that there are, and if they can enforce it, it might change the market. But the question is, are they able to enforce it? The type of rentals that the short-term rental people are doing are not necessarily what the market really needs. The market really needs rentals that can accommodate a family with three or four or five or six people. And I don't think those short-term rentals are really designed for that. Usually they're more luxury-type condos or things like that. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But I think the correction that's underway in the housing market is going to help everything. There's going to be a lot of properties that have been kept off the market that will be added to the market. There's anecdotal evidence that people are rushing to list their properties in Toronto. I don't know about in Vancouver, but in Toronto, the sales are not there. So the number of listings of places for sale is surging higher, mm-hmm. and sales are still very, very low. And then this is going into a time of the year when sales normally are extremely low in November, December anyway.
And higher listings, does that mean people have to pay off mortgage debt? They can't afford it anymore?
You know, there could be a bunch of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Most people don't, if prices have come down, and at the $1 million level and up, which is where most of the houses in Toronto are, most of the properties in Toronto are, it's unlikely that the prices are where they were in 2022. So they're probably already looking at a $100,000 or $200,000 loss. In fact, some of the stuff on Twitter, or X now, I guess it's called, indicates that some places are down $300,000 or $400,000 in that $1 to $2 million range. So those people, because of human nature being what it is, people will very seldom want to sell at a loss. So they must be in desperate straits to be doing that. Either that, or they bought a long time ago at $200,000, and they figure, well, we missed the peak, but if we could still get $1.1 million, something that was peaking out at $1.5 million, we'll take it, kind of thing. But I don't know if people think that way. I think they're more likely to wait until they're forced to sell. And there definitely are some renewals coming up that are pretty severe, like interest rates that were at 2% or even lower, at 1.5%, now being renewed at 5 or 5.5 or 6%. So, and in some cases, depending on the situation, people can't qualify when they go to renew, so they basically are forced to sell. If it's an insured mortgage, and they've kept their payments up the whole way, and they don't change lender, then they don't need to go through a requalification process. But quite a few people will have to go through qualify again, and most of them, or a lot of them, won't be able to qualify if they have a lot of other debt as well.
Hmm. So with interest rates now starting to hit the economy, Did the Bank of Canada and other central banks overdo it with this rapid increase in interest rates? Could they have just done it one or two times and then waited for it to take a bite? Because I've been told it takes 18 months, 2 years for an interest rate hike really to start to have any effect.
Yeah, the phrase is for decades has been monetary policy works with long and variable legs. But the average is, as you say, 2 years until it starts to really hit. Now that depends. Most of those sayings or those themes are come out of the U.S. and the Federal Reserve, and it's different down there. It's very different down there because. They have 30-year mortgages. So with the exception of that thing that happened in 2006 with the adjustable rate mortgages, most of the time, the people that have bought a house with a 30-year mortgage, a fixed interest rate for 30 years, if you can imagine, Canadians can't even imagine that, they aren't affected that much by monetary policy because they're, even though the government's raising interest rates or the Bank of Canada or the Federal Reserve's raising interest rates, they're still good at the interest rate they're at. And so they don't need to worry about that. In Canada, though, in the recent past, something like 40% of all mortgages were taken out at a variable rate, which theoretically means they instantly go up with the rising rates. And the rest of them, usually the term is at a maximum of 5 years before the reset hits. So given that the rates started to rise probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like 50 or 60% of those mortgages, at least, maybe even a little bit higher than that, are facing imminent reset on these higher rates. So, and it isn't just the mortgage, it's inflation. You think about food, and even though inflation's moderating now, for a while there it was up, 7-8%. Now it's down to 3-4%. But those prices haven't come down. They're just not going up as fast. So people's cost of living for their other expenses have gone up quite a bit too. So I think the crunch is hitting, and I don't think it would have made any difference. There's pretty strong evidence that the central banks are followers, not leaders. So they were just raising rates because rates were already going up anyway. They were just trying to keep up. And in fact, they were so far behind there for a while. I wrote a bit about this on my weekend note several times. The rate of regular commerce was at 3-4%, and the central banks were still down at 1-2%. So they need to raise rates up to where they are now just to catch up. And so they haven't really been leading this. It's been a function of the financial markets have finally gotten back to a more normal situation. And because they were so abnormal for so long, basically for 12 years, interest rates were kept artificially low. A whole bunch of people borrowed way too much money and speculated on properties and other things, and now they can't handle the debts. And it wouldn't have mattered what the Bank of Canada or the Federal Reserve did in that situation; it was still always going to be a crunch time at some point.
Now, getting back to BC, where the provincial government plans to crack down on short-term rentals, people like the movie industry say it's really going to hurt them because they like to rent stuff for 3 or 4 months during the movie shoot or television show shoot. Tourism operators, as you said, families like to holiday together, so it was good for that. In Vancouver, there's a shortage of hotel space already, and Vancouver hotel rates are outrageous. The city doesn't have one hotel with 1,000 rooms, so again, they have a shortage of that. Tourism operators, hospitality facilitators, tourism or companies are all worried about the impact this is going to have long-term on the BC economy. Is that something governments haven't factored in?
Yeah, I mean, those are market things that happen where people decide to take advantage of travel. I mean, the whole Airbnb thing, I think it generated a lot of travel that wasn't going to happen anyway, right? So the people were really excited by the idea of being able to rent a place for 2 or 3 nights and post a few pictures on Instagram and sort of like that. So I think a lot of that travel was travel that wasn't happening before the phenomenon of Airbnb came along. So what's going to happen now? I don't know. I suspect people are going to probably, because of a lack of money, with these higher interest rates, they're going to decide to just stay home more and not go out and go on these trips as much. It's something that is relatively recent, and it's very expensive. Hotel rooms are ridiculously expensive. Living in Alberta, the Rocky Mountains is where most of us like to go for a getaway, and the prices there are just through the roof. So it's going to deter a lot of people. I mean, when your car loan is costing you $700, $800, $900, $1,000 a month, and your mortgage has gone from $2,000 a month to $4,000 a month, something's going to have to give, and it's probably those Airbnb trips and those expensive hotel rooms that are going to get chopped off the list of things to do.
We'll have more with Hilliard Macbeth right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Hilliard Macbeth. Hilliard, Canada's biggest bank, Royal, has made some predictions about real estate prices, but it seems they're all over the map. It's like they're covering everything. They're going to go up. They're going to go down. What are they saying?
Well, I think, you know, I did an investigation just because I remember that the banks had put out a forecast in April after their results came out. And I was curious. So I looked, and they actually were forecasting an increase in house prices for the year of 2023, and then even bigger increases for the 24 to 29, the next 5 years. I thought, that's crazy, because already house prices, especially in Toronto, have come down. CMHC, I checked, and CMHC has a pretty good handle on these things because they do a lot of the insured mortgages. They have a 9% decline in house prices so far in 2023, I think that was up to about July. So, and then other people that forecast these things have a similar forecast. The CREA, the most optimistic cheerleader for the real estate industry, also had a small decline in prices for this year. So the reason that I was looking it up is because I was thinking, you know, the year end for the banks, they've got an odd year end, October 31st. So in a couple of weeks, the year is going to end for all the big banks. And I thought, well, I wonder what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to alter these forecasts lower for the housing market, because obviously the evidence is in that the house prices went down. And what they're going to have to do then is they're going to have to assess their risk, because for instance, in the case of Royal Bank, they've got about $800 billion in total loans outstanding, and over $570 billion of it is mortgages and personal loans, and car loans and credit cards, that sort of thing. So it's about 70% what they call retail lending. So, and of course, we know that retail lending is entirely backed by household collateral. Now, you can't get much of a loan from a bank if you don't have equity in a house. So the bulk of that money, either whether it be mortgages or HELOCs or whatever, is tied to is backed by a property. So if the property goes down, then the collateral value goes down, and the amount you can borrow goes down, and that's the crunch that is coming. The other thing that happens, of course, is that if house prices go down, the computer models of the econometric models of all the banks would indicate that some people are going to default on their mortgages, because they've got they don't have the ability to pay their mortgage, and now they can't sell it. They can't sell the property to pay off the mortgage because the prices of the house has gone down too much. So those losses, then some of them would hit the banks. It's interesting, you know, the banks used to have, 5 or 6 years ago, they used to have most of their or maybe a substantial portion of their new mortgages would be insured. They preferred that people actually put a down payment smaller than 20% so they could get the insurance, usually through CMHC or one of the other private sector insurers. And but recently, I think because the qualification rules are easier to handle, with the uninsured mortgages, something like 80% of all the new mortgages have been uninsured, which requires a 20% down payment, but the qualification restrictions aren't as stringent. So so the risk level has gone up for the banks because now they don't have as many insured mortgages. They get more uninsured mortgages than they have insured mortgages. And if the house prices go down, now it would take a big drop in house prices, obviously more than 20% for recent buyers, and even bigger than that for people that bought years ago, for them to get, you know, upside down or underwater on the mortgage, as they say, and then to get into trouble. But the trend is there, and the rules in banking is that they have to reserve against the possibility of future losses on these loans. So they would have to increase their reserves, what they call provisions for credit losses, to recognize the fact that the risk level has gone up. And so that's what I'm going to be watching for. It's going to all come out in about 5 weeks from now. It'll be very interesting to see if they'll have to reduce their forecasts for house prices. I think the reality is right in front of us. The evidence is right there that house prices have gone down. So they can't deny that any longer.
I know you like to talk about Tesla. You own a Tesla. Your wife has a Tesla. What's going on with that company? They say their profit forecast is way down.
Yeah, so they just came out with the results on Wednesday night, and their profits went up. They actually, there's a lot of good things happening. They've got a new vehicle coming out called the Cybertruck, which is going to be very popular. They say they've got 1 million reservations already for it. So at 100,000 dollars per truck, that's $100 billion of revenue, But the production is not starting. Serious production is not starting until next year. They're going to start putting them out in early November. I don't know if everybody's seen them, but they're quite odd looking. They're made out of stainless steel and stuff. So that was a positive. But the negative was that their profit margin went down. Now, the reason their profit margin went down is because they've cut their prices on the Model 3 and the Model Y. The Model Y being now the best-selling car in North America, and maybe even in the world, and they dropped the price dramatically on that one. And Model 3, which is selling, since the Model Y came out, the Model 3 is a smaller sedan, is not selling as well as it was. But now people can get into that with some pretty big incentives provided by the government in the U.S. under the new IRA Act. It's called the Inflation Reduction Act, but it had a lot of incentives for renewable energy and things like electric vehicles. People can get into it for around $40,000 after the incentives are applied, which is pretty close to the average purchase of a car. So that's the positive. But the negative was, because they cut prices and because they have some expenses that relate to ramping up several new factories and switching over their production lines to accommodate this new vehicle, the Cybertruck, their profit margin went down. Now, it didn't go down that much. It went down from something like 19% to 18% gross margin, something like that. But the market took it very bad. The other thing that the market didn't like, the stock went down after the earnings came out, but then they had the conference call, as these big companies tend to have. And Elon Musk was on the conference call, and the chief financial officer was on the conference call. And Elon Musk went on at some length. I haven't listened to the call, but just based on reactions on social media, apparently he went on at some length for about interest rates and the outlook for the economy. And he's really, really concerned about, he said, if people can't afford a car, it doesn't matter whether we cut our price or not. They can't afford it. They can't afford it. So he's got quite a gloomy outlook on the next little while. Now, he's done this before, and it's turned out to not be correct, but it's almost like he's trying to lower people's expectations. But so just to zoom out a little bit, the stock was on a tear. It got up to over $400 a share a couple of years ago, when all the renewable energy stocks were very strong. And then it went down to $100 January of 2023, and now in 9 or 10 months later, It's around 200, and it got up to about 250. I don't know if it got to 300 on this run. And now it's weakening after this conference call last night down. It's dropped down close to $200 a share on the way down, $217 a share right now. So it's a $700 billion stock. Elon Musk still owns a substantial portion of it, so he's the wealthiest person in the world. But it was worth quite a bit more than that at one point. It was worth well over $1 trillion at one point. The company has $26 billion in cash. They have basically no debt. And I think they'll do fine over the next few years. But I am in the position of wanting to buy the stock, but I'm waiting for a lower price. So I think to some degree, Elon Musk is right about the... It was what we were just talking about a few minutes ago. The higher interest rates are going to affect everybody, and that includes house sales and car sales as well.
Any thoughts on Alberta wanting its own pension plan versus the Canadian pension plan?
Well, you know, it's pretty crazy idea. I think this is a political, I don't know, I'd call it a stunt. It's you know, anything bashing Ottawa and Alberta goes over really well especially with the premier's problem is she's got a fairly strong group of people that backed her that are quite libertarian or right wing, and they just hate Ottawa. They hate everything to do with Ottawa. So a pension plan that has all of Canada in it is something they're not going to like much at all. And then they got this report that came out that said that they could withdraw something like $300 billion or out of $550 billion, Alberta has the right to withdraw more than half of it, something like $300 billion, because that's what Alberta's put in. Alberta's put in more and taken out less is the basic argument. So it's ridiculous, the whole thing, and there's no way that the rest of Canada's going to agree to allow Alberta to take out anything like that amount. The more realistic numbers are probably below $100 billion, and so of course it's not going to go anywhere. But and there's no real benefit to having a separate Alberta pension plan. You still got to have all the money managers. They're going to end up in buying the same investments that the Canada pension plan would have bought, more or less, unless they make the ridiculous decision, very risky decision, to start investing more in Alberta with a pension plan. But I think about 70 or 80% of Albertans are against the idea, so it's not going anywhere. The Alberta government's launched an advertising campaign. They've got a committee led by Jim Dinning going around and supposed to be listening to Albertans to see if they want it, but they're really, you know, trying to influence the views. But I think they're going to run into a lot of really strong opposition. So I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's just was done to appease a group of supporters that just love it when people bash Ottawa.
Any other things that we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, you know, the dollar, the Canadian dollar, is below 73 cents. Now, it did get down below 70 cents in March of 2020 during COVID. But recently, then it ran up to 76 cents. This is all against the U.S. dollar, of course. And now it's down below 73 cents. It's been quite weak the last few days. And the reason is, I think, that it can't be oil, because oil is at $90 a barrel. Normally, when oil goes up to $90 a barrel, the Canadian dollar is very strong. So it must be the fact that the people think that the Canadian government and the Canadian central banks can stop raising rates, whereas rates are still going higher in the U.S. So people can get 5% interest on the U.S. dollar bank account right now, and they don't get any higher interest rate in Canada, and Canada's a much viewed as a less secure place to hold your money. So that could be a problem for Canada, because if our dollar goes down, if you know, all it would take would be the housing bubble finally bursting, something like that would cause the dollar to go down below 70 cents. And then the problem will be, because we import so much of our consumption from other countries like China and the U.S., our inflation rate will go higher. So our inflation rate would be higher than the U.S., our interest rates would be lower than the U.S., and then we would be forced, unless we wanted our dollar to go down to 60 cents or something like that, which it did, but that was a long time ago. If they wanted to protect it from going down much lower, they would have to raise interest rates, and that's going to be just devastating, given that our household sector and our corporate sector, both sectors have some of the highest debts in the world of all the developed countries. So we're really in a difficult spot in Canada, and of course we got ourselves into it, and we're going to eventually get out of it for sure somehow. But it's the weakness in the Canadian dollar kind of highlights the fact that we're in a tough spot.
Hilliard, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Nice to chat with you.
My guest has been Hilliard MacBeth. His website, MacBethMacLeodPartners.com. If you have any questions for Hilliard or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.